the revenue budget 2018-19. Item 8, consider the initial savings proposed for 2019-20 as they relate to adult social care and public health, paper C. The comments submitted by the Isle of Wight Vulnerable Commissioning Group and Isle of Wight Health Trust on these proposals are attached on paper B. So, does somebody want to introduce this? Carol, thank you.
Certainly. Thank you. Very pleased to be able to bring this to the committee this evening. I want to place it within some context because I can see that all that's been sent is actually there's a spreadsheet effectively that accompanied the paper that went to Cabinet. There are some £2.306 million worth of savings needed from adult social care, which is spelled out within the report in front of you. That actually compares to some £3.767 million for this year, which we are on track to achieve, and some £3.485 million for the year of 2017-18. And it is fair to say that local authorities, including this one, has done its utmost to protect adult social care. But what I think the most important note of prologue I should emphasise to you is that adult social care is, by any pundit's assessment, regardless of political persuasion, facing very significant funding pressures. The King's Fund, a fairly robust organisation, places there to be a £12 billion worth of shortfall within the next 5 years. And the Care Quality Commission talks about adult social care being at, and I quote, the tipping point. So this is really, really difficult stuff. And here on the island, we know that we have a particularly aging population, and indeed our own analysis, led by Sally's experts, frankly, revealed that between 2017 and 2030, we can expect to see on this island alone a 55.6% increase in the number of over 85s. And that's a very relevant number because nowadays, if you are 65 and you have followed good advice, again from public health, and again, it's very much there in last week's 10-year NHS plan, you would expect at the age of 65, quite frankly, to have to go nowhere near adult social care, in that we do, by law, implement eligibility criteria. But once you get to over 85, the vast majority of over 85s have a multiplicity of long-term conditions, and it's those in their combination that means that you need help and care. So what you've got in front of you are proposals for £2.306 million from adult social care. And there is no rocket science to this. There are fundamentally three ways in which you can save money. The first is that you need to manage your demand. The second is that you need to contain your costs. And the third is that you need to look to where you can raise revenue, where it's legitimate to do so. So each of these proposals set in front of you fit into one of those three things: manage demand, contain cost, raise revenue. What we have been very careful to do, where we have, and there's some really difficult decisions which will be going to full council set out in this budget this year from across the totality of the council, including adult social care. But where we have made major changes, for instance, mental health-based services, I'm expecting some questions around that, and indeed you will have read Martin's response on behalf of himself and the Trust to committee this evening around this, informed, I'm sure, by very legitimately held concerns, probably by Leslie, who we have with us also today. Where we've done, where we've put up some really difficult ones, we have not done so in order to wave shrouds. We have done so because actually in adult social care, we've faced some really difficult decisions in terms of balancing our budget, which is our legal duty to do. So where we've done so, we have not removed all budgets. We have taken a proportion of those budgets out in order to enable us to begin to force us actually to begin to have to work in some very, very different ways. My final message of prologue, or way of prologue this evening, what we've also done in terms of preparing for this is to make investment. I am really proud of the fact that the largest single investment that came out of the Improved Better Care Fund, 3 years worth of funding that was made available to local authorities a couple of years ago now, the single largest investment of some £1.67 million, in addition, is precisely about what you have just been hearing with regards to investment in early help. And that is called the Living Well Service, which has been spectacularly successful in terms of managing demand, but not simply turning people away, but absolutely turning them to alternative forms of support. So I'm happy to take questions on any of the proposals set in front of you, but what I wanted to do was to set out some wider context, and I hope I've done so.
Before we go to questions, thank you for all the contributions from CCG and NHS Trust. Is there anything that you would like to add? Particularly, I don't know whether it's your comment, Martin, about the open book situation?
Yes, I think, you know, there's always a difficulty and a challenge between balancing budgets and delivering services, and some options will always be unpalatable to some people. What we're trying to do, and I think we've started that process, is certainly across health, is to have a complete open book around resources that we have available. So we now share all of the investments and disinvestments that we make with the Hospital Trust, and we're also doing the same at LCB. And you'll see from my comments that I think that it would be really helpful for the island per se at the local care board to share all the monies that they have available in order for them to take more conscious decisions, because the key is to avoid the unintended consequence. So doing something that actually impacts upon somebody else's budget. And then just to give you a practical example, and this is, you won't have heard this yet, but there's some very positive news in the CCG funding allocation for 2019-2020. Where last year the CCG received £118,000 extra, this next year we'll receive £12.7 million, which is welcome. But I certainly don't see that as the CCG's money to decide how to spend it. Actually, it's the local care board's decision as to how those monies are to be spent, so that we align the various priorities that we have, because we do need to make some disinvestment decisions, and I'll come back to that in part 10. But we also have to make some investment decisions where we have service failures. So I think as a general principle, what we're trying to move towards is much more transparency and accountability in how those monies are being utilised. We did go through with Carol and John, you know, the savings that were put forward. We understood the rationale for them. And in the main, we are content that there won't be any unintended consequences. I think there was one where I wasn't able to comment on, really know what that might mean, but the others, they're sensible decisions in the face of having to make difficult decisions.
Thank you very much for that, Martin. Maggie, do you want to say anything?
I haven't really got anything further to add to what Martin has. Okay. We've been through this together and we've got fed our comments back. I just want to reiterate the comments that Martin made about the emerging strength of the local care board if we ask this.
It sounds, just before you come in, it does sound rather that we need some sort of accountability from the local care. Although, Dave, are you going to speak on that?
Hang up the microphone.
Press the button on the right, Dave.
Yeah. A little green for me at the moment. I'm sure you can hear me, though, fair. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, because I know I have to go to another meeting shortly and I wanted to be here for this particular element, that I'm sure Claire will give you some picture of where we're at as an administration in responding to the budget proposals, and listen carefully to what was said by colleagues from the CCG, which I fully endorse. I think the good thing about where we are this year is that you're able to sit here this evening and consider these options, because we came out early with our, in an open and transparent way in what we were considering. And whilst I accept that comes with that, there's obviously questions and questions and questions, it's the fact that it shows that we genuinely are being very careful about what we do and recognising the impact. And that's why we did what we've done in terms of early doors, and I think it's important to remember that. The other important thing here is that some of these, depending on how you read them, will appear more unpalatable than to others. What is important is that officers have looked at these. We now, as a cabinet, have the political responsibility to decide which course of action we take. But one of the good things recently has been working with the CCG and with Health towards our One Public Service, because I do believe if we work together a lot more in the way that Martin has indicated, we actually will be able to achieve more for our money for our residents and get the best service with the reducing funds that we've got. So that was just an overhead, really, and I'm really interested to hear what Martin had to say, and also appreciate that Claire has had a finger on this for some considerable time, so she'll look to add it. But I just wanted to set the scene for you, that was all. So thank you, Chair, for giving that time.
Thank you, Dave. It's quite a brave move to do what you've done, Dave, in publishing the figures in advance. It takes a degree of confidence and invites a degree of criticism, but criticism is only as useful as it's received. And I think that certainly in the meetings that I've been to at the NHS Trust Board, where they lay everything bare on the table and open themselves to comment and criticism and use that criticism in the most constructive way. And I think Martin is doing the same with the CCG, and we can go a little bit more into what Martin's doing on item 10. But I think that from what's being said, it is essential that we have the same openness and transparency from the local care board, which seems to be assuming all sorts of important decision-making roles through the course of this meeting. I wonder what it's going to end up by the end of the meeting. Johnson.
So, Chairman, just to reiterate a point I made earlier, that the local care board is not a decision-making body. Decisions still say it's sovereign organisations. So, whilst it's sort of a forum for the three parties to come together and agree and move forward, the ultimate decision still has to come back to the cabinet and the board of the trust and the CCG. There is a potential for moving forward to making it, delegate some power and delegate some authority to it, but that would have to be done with the consent of the board, the CCG's board, the trust's board, and our own camp from council. So I think you can be assured that it's not a decision making body, and the decisions will still rest in the right places at the right time.
Thank you, John. Members, any questions? Did you clear? Sorry, Doug.
I just to clarify what you just said. You'll see that there's some work that's been done on the local care board, which, if you look at the forward plan, is due to be a decision coming in the next cabinet regarding some funds of pooling funds with CCG and ourselves. Our commission is all on the forward plan. Just read the forward plan, and you'll see that those decisions are still coming to those other bodies to be made.
Thank you, Claire. Members, any questions? Michael.
A first point, and then I'll go on to a question. The Paul, the scrutiny officer, worked very well on getting some questions on all the savings, and there were particular ones on adult social care that went at the scrutiny committee last week. It would just be good that those questions could be referred to yourself, Carol, to actually have answers, because there was a list of questions on each of the items. And I will say I welcome the fact that these were done, because last year when they were done, I put lots of questions and never got answers. So I'm glad that there is a process in place, and I thank my particular point that I actually want to hone in very predictably is the mental health day centres, right? Which actually is obviously what we raised last year, is under reconfiguration. A bit alarmed that there seems to be 87 clients that actually use that service, which, in the nature of it, is quite an expensive service for 87. But I refer to the notes, very good notes, from the CCG and other my health trustee about the importance of the mental health day centres is that there needs to be activity during the day. And I know that the safe haven, which was about making sure that there was provision in the evenings and on weekends, part of that is then referring people who are in crisis to daytime activity. And I think that there is a real lack of services. And looking at some of the material that's come through Healthwatch and through people like Justin Pinder, who's raised this issue as a service user, as a sort of champion, that we really have got to get a real model of community-based mental health day services that are actually moving people on. It's really, really urgent. And I just want to know what the talks are in actually replacing, right, the day centres that have been run by the council, because there's a desperate need. If you look at some of the cases, mm-hmm. I know in serious case reviews, it is this thing that I have nowhere to go, I have no to do. And Maslow's hierarchy of need, unless you've got centres which are helping people go forward. I also like to refer to the survey that was done by Healthwatch. Says that people were asking for mental health clinics or services. So there is actual evidence of coming out of Healthwatch that there's an absolute desperate need for this. And I'd like to know.
Thank you, Michael, for that.
Months
Martin.
So what I would say is it's not just the council run day centres that aren't necessarily delivering good value for money. If I look at the CCG, services that we commission separate to those, then they don't pass muster either in terms of the quality of the service or the value for money for the services that are delivered. So again, it sort of leaks into item 10. But what is absolutely clear is that we have to change the mental health services for the island. I will reference the fact that as we can start to move into implementing some of the work that we're doing. We have asked Healthwatch to support primary care to ensure that there is thorough engagement to service users in how we create some of those local plans. So rather than second guessing and saying this is the way we should do it, we'll get some involvement from primary care and service users to do that. And I know that Leslie is with us tonight because one of the questions that John asked me and we anticipated through this conversation is not necessarily the operational issues that relate to mental health services, of which there are many, but what should mental health services be looking like in the next 12 months? And that work is already ongoing, and I know without wanting to steal Leslie's thunder, there's a heck of a lot of work that's going on. As I put in my comment here, that what we have at the moment doesn't work, so we have to change it. And the question is not whether we should change, it's how we change. So there will be some more money being commissioned, invested into community mental health services, and the model that we have at the moment will change quite significantly. I'll refer to that a little bit more, but you know, in terms of the day centres, I'm sure Leslie can explain what she's doing from a health perspective.
Thank you very much for that, Martin. Well,
thank you, Chair.
Leslie, did you want to come in first?
Agree with all that's been said. I think the model that we have been developing in the last year in consultation with people who use services and staff and other stakeholders is a model that fills the current gap that sits between the very specialist community mental health services and primary care. And we know the safe haven sits in that gap, so there are limited resources there, and those that aren't there are not working as effectively as they could do. Mental health day services are an example. Of that, we could do much more with the resource that they've got. The model is a tiered model that is properly integrated between both authority, health and third sector partners, and that improves accessibility and responsiveness of services. Pulls up our community mental health teams to work with a much smaller number of people in a much more intensive and responsive way, and develops a wellbeing service that sits between primary care and the community mental health team that is a much more psychosocial model that uses educational approaches, recovery college and so on, clear links into employment and supporting people into recovery. The model's there, we're starting implementation of that model now. It's going to take a 2-year implementation programme that we're working through. But I think we've got a really strong model that we can deliver in the future.
Rodney now.
Not Paul.
Thank you, Chairman. But Leslie has covered what I was going to ask.
Okay.
Thank you. This is really exciting development, and I applaud what Martin and Maggie are doing, and I applaud your approach. Open book demonstrably works. And I'm going to make a proposal now that the council, we've got, pick up on the example of Martin and Maggie with Open Book for our health and adult social care services. And the recommendation, of course, will go to Cabinet or full council. Can I have a second there?
If you'd like to respond, we've got actually no problem to work to that model. We're looking towards that through the care model. And in fact,
we do have a problem.
We need something quite similar to that.
Thank you.
One thing that I would say, while I have got the microphone to share, is that one thing we have to work out is the timing of decisions. Because we often have to take our decisions about our budget in advance of when decisions are taken. And that's just a conversation that we need to have and work out how best we can do that. Because clearly, we've got a legal duty to set our budget by the end of February.
Okay. John, that's a task that. Can I second that task?
Absolutely.
Okay. Members, let's go to the vote.
Is that pretty difficult?
Right. The, just for clarity, that the council operates an open book policy of its finances for all health and adult social care services. Be supported, and the scrutiny committee be requested to endorse this and make an appropriate recommendation to the Cabinet and full council.
Unanimous.
Unanimous. Thank you very much. So we'll now move on to item B, which is Claire, Cabinet member